Well, I think they're more just sitting there in my head than anything. What year did you guys get here?
Well, that was born here.
Mm-hmm. What year?
33.
What your mother, what year did they get here?
1928.
Mm-hmm. Why did Hazleton? Why Hazleton?
Why Hazleton? Because when, okay, the folks come from California to Hazleton. Spring of 1928. But now in California at that time, they were pushing, you know, these Canadian agents, mm-hmm. they were pushing for settlers to come to Canada and selling property and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So they sold my dad a property over on the Cranberry River, right close to the junction there, where, or the old junction, over the bridge across the Cranberry River, down there. Coming on the junction there, coming out from Terrace, very close down there. So he put a down payment on, and that's where he was heading for. And then they got to the border. The border people told him that he'll never make it to Prince George. He's driving this old Hudson car, and he had a goat on the fender to feed the kids. I wasn't one of them, I was born here. And then he got to Prince George finally.
Uh-huh.
They told him he'd never make it to Hazleton. Well, he made it to Hazleton. And Ross Lake, or Sealy Lake, was the end of the road then, period.
Mm-hmm.
Going west. And that's where woodcocks were, right? So that's where he met woodcocks. And then Mrs. Woodcock looked after the kids for a little while. They looked around. And they met, and they were looking for pack horses, and traded the car for pack horses. Uh-huh. My horse.
Was your father a farmer down in California?
No, no. He was all kinds of things. But he sure as hell wasn't a farmer. But they met Lee Adler and Otto Adler and those people, and they told him it's crazy to go in there, right? Because there's no schools, there's no nothing. Nothing but Indians in there, and hell, I think in Kitmangool and up there in the Nass, they were still taking a few scalps then.
What was that?
So they said, you stay and look after the Dean Ranch, and we're going north, and we're going trapping, packing and trapping. So we stayed there, and then the next spring they bought this place.
This place?
Yep. Moved down to it in 28.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that worked out.
And you were born in 33.
Yep.
How many people in your family?
Well, five
kids.
Mm-hmm. You the youngest or the oldest?
Yeah, youngest.
And you started school at 6, 7?
I don't know. Didn't take me long to go through school.
Uh-huh.
No, it didn't take too long for that. Because out here, there wasn't that steady of schooling.
Uh-huh.
In them days, sometimes there wasn't enough kids to keep a school.
Where was the school when that was open?
Well, to start with, Mom sent the kids working out across the river at Sheehan. There was a school there. And then that closed down. And they took an old building down here. Right across the road from Ravenwood, an old log building there, made that into a school. Mm-hmm. And man, one of the school kids burnt that down. Won't mention any names, wasn't he? And then we were out of school. And then we built another school, finally, up on Wookie's place. That was the last school, but in the meantime, there was lots of times there was no school.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to school part-time in Prince Rupert during the war.
Mm-hmm.
Part-time by correspondence, and part-time grade school, you know?
Yeah. School much of a priority back then?
No. No. Not really, no. Not for country people.
Yeah.
There might have been a few that it was a priority with, eh? Depending on your, well,
family,
I suppose, depending on how much money your parents had in their pocket. Because you all had to go out and board out someplace to go to school. And that was just, it was better to work than it was to go to school. mean, those of us that weren't lazy, we'd rather work than go to school.
Yeah.
I mean, not going to school, I used to take off up the mountain, I'd go fishing or whatever.
It was tall. Hooky, man.
That was hooky, all right. And sometimes I'd be gone for a week or two at a time.
Yeah. And nobody was that worried about it.
Oh, I might have been worried, but they didn't know where I was, so I couldn't do anything about it. And then, of course, when time come, I just quit school and walked out.
Mm-hmm. How far did you get?
I think the last teacher told me that I could start in grade 9. There was no use in me doing any more because I knew it all anyhow.
Yeah.
So I could go up to grade 9 from where I was.
Uh-huh.
And I think I was in grade 6 or something. And she left.
You remember her name?
Yep, the last teacher was Mary Williams.
What were the teachers like that they had here? What were the teachers like that they had here?
Oh, some of them were nice. I just wish I was a little older then.
Yeah? Young ones mostly?
We had two real young ones one time. And they didn't make out. We had two of them in 1 year, right? Because they couldn't hack this. They came up from the city.
Yeah.
They were nice young kids just out of school, but they couldn't... they were probably teaching on a permit or something. It was just a little bit too much snow, too far from town.
Yeah.
We had some good teachers and some weren't worth a darn. But some of the best teachers, the two best teachers that I know of, we had one was Mrs. Griffiths. She was a very good teacher. And she was in the last schoolhouse, the one that we built there on Wookie's property.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mary Williams after her. Mary Williams and Mrs. Griffiths, both real good teachers, and you learn something. You know, you didn't mind going to school then, but we had a lot of teachers if you didn't care to go to school, you didn't want to see them.
Were they mostly women?
No, they were teacher. Men and women. I don't remember what the ratio is, but right now, right off my mind, I can think about 5 women, and I can think about 2 or 3 men. You know?
Yeah.
So I really, but it's mostly women teachers. One old teacher we had, he was a little English one, short. We used to get under his hide a little bit, and he always carried a stick with him. You guys talk about capital punishment, it's too bad they don't have it today. A stick, he'd go out and cut a stick, he's a little bigger than his thumb, you know, about 3 feet long. And that's what he used. And one day he went by my desk, and I was just sitting there just waiting for him. He went by, so it was right at my toe. If I booted him, I'd be right at the end of my reach. So I booted him hard, and I jumped out the other side, and he come down right where I'd been sitting with that stick. And, of course, broke it in half. So we all laughed. Big joke. Yeah, that was funny. But...
how many people up at the Valley about that time?
Well, at the school,
30s, 40s.
Back in there now, we had quite a mixture of people. Talk about integration. We had better integration then with the native people than we do today. Because some of them at that time, Pete Maldo sent some of his kids up here. We had Gabe Louie's kids going to school here. Hattie Tate, different ones like that. There's a few more. I can't remember their names right now.
Wasn't there a school in the village?
Yep.
Didn't want it, didn't like it?
Oh, they sent them up here. And the school in the village, of course, it was all right, but they wanted them to go here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, went to school together, and we... had our fights together, and we played together, and did everything together, and really didn't know there was any difference between us at that point.
Yeah. Was it like that for the most part, or was there a fair, mm-hmm. fair amount of segregation?
No, that's the way it was.
It's just always been
common thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no such a thing as you're Indian, I'm white.
Yeah.
That's the way it was, right? No. But there was probably, oh, there might have been, when I was going to school, there might have been 20 kids in school, but that would be all, that would be probably the extreme most.
Yeah.
And of course they had the school at 4 Mile, but that's another story. I never went there and I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
But that closed down, see, that's another school that closed down because they run out of kids down there.
Yeah.
Because all the Loves were growing up, the Hagmans were growing up, you know, and things like that, so those schools closed down. And this one was the last one to go.
Mm-hmm. Many of the people who went to school were still around?
Yeah, there's a considerable amount. Like most of the Wookiees are still around.
Mm-hmm.
Some might be in Alberta and places, but they're still around. And, of the Indian people I went to school with here, there's half of them were dead.
Hmm.
Some of them from alcoholism.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they left. I say some of them, but some of them from other reasons. But you see, when they left this environment, and the high speed
school
and the city life and stuff, high speed of the city life and everything, couldn't handle it, eh? Get trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Well, stuff like that. I could name several, but I won't for the benefit of that tape. But different ones who went to school with, you know, were like two or three kids we had there, Jake Louis. Most of his children are all dead now. And, different ones. So. And the same here,
well, bring
and the other kids I went to school with, and all the Wookiees, mainly Wookiees and Campbells that filled the school. And there was lots of Wookiees.
I'm sorry,
okay?
Yeah.
Not working?
No.
Nothing wrong,
we'll find out.
Okay.
We'll find out.
Don't know. Check it. Check it out.
Yeah, it's okay.
Oh, yeah. So what else? That's enough about that subject.
What about the community?
Don't know anything about it. Somebody else?
Is there much social work between the people?
Well, there used to be quite a bit before, but not for me. I didn't socialize too much.
Mm-hmm.
No. Except that I used to make homebrew at school and get teachers' kids drunk. And, stuff like that. But I mean, other than that, that was all socializing.
How'd you occupy your time?
Scrapping. Fishing. Take them off, you know, put the mountain right there, mm-hmm. Moonlight Mountain. And one time I could go all over that mountain up there, you know, blindfolded because I've been there so much.
Yeah.
Night or day, didn't make any difference to me. And then, of course, I could go clear over the mountain into Kippen Cool area, Kippen Cranberry River, you know.
Uh-huh.
Kippen Gaw Lake. And spent a lot of time doing things like that. Plus, I've been away for some time. Myself, in the RCAF. Did a stint in there. Up into Alaska, down into Montana. You know, jumping around a little bit. Spent a couple of years in Yukon. I'm up north, but I never was much of a socializer. Unless there was a bottle involved. But then after I got married and all these kids came along, I couldn't afford to drink and feed the kids. So.
Do you
know what? Oh, I sometimes I wonder why. Right, Anna?
Hmm. I should tell him a couple of stories Warner Williams told me about you the other day.
Oh, did he tell you a good story about me?
What is happening, Warner Williams? It's about me. Be quiet.
Did you say Ronnie Williams?
Warren.
Oh, Warren.
Warner?
Warner.
I ran into him the other day. My moved his 8th form. You're related to that Campbell up the discount said Bruce is the name.
Must be time to go.
Your time I need. Run your own truck one?
Yep. For years.
Yeah?
Yep.
More boats?
Well, I used to have a trap line now on my big Oliver.
Uh-huh.
That was back in the later 50s or 60s. Or trap down there. And I finally sold it. I got trap line up the Bellarine River now.
Uh-huh. Bellarine River, where's that?
Up north of Stewart. Mediad, north of Mediad there. So that's the trap line. Clear to the headwaters of the Bellarine.
I was listening to that Wally Love tape. And he was saying that animals in the area were more animals in the area in the 50s and 60s than there was in the 30s and 40s?
Well, I wasn't out in the 30s and 40s too much because after all, I wasn't born until 33. Eh?
Yeah.
So I don't know what it was like then. No, I wouldn't know about that part. But I know that the animals fluctuate.
Uh-huh.
Like I went in the trap line 1 year and I didn't even make my flying out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And worked like the devil too.
Yeah.
Because I flew in, there just wasn't anything there. And that was 2 years ago. Nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then last year I did real good and didn't have to work half as hard. Yeah. So, you know, something happened there. Mm-hmm. But, it could be either, you know, something happened there, you know, with, say, the Martin May. It could be either some disease or parasites or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that trap line, nobody trapped back in there for many years.
This was the one at Stewart.
Yeah. For many years on that area, nobody had been in there. And then I went in and I had a kind of a poor year. And then 2 years later, I went in and got nothing hardly, eh? Well, see, they were going down, and it may have been because they got too sick, they got a disease, they weren't farmed, eh? You got to farm them things. In other words, you got to take out some every year or so in order to keep the population stable.
Uh-huh.
It's just like your cows, if you get, you know, you got feed for 100 head and you try to keep 200, somebody's going to go hungry.
Yeah.
Or you're keeping too crowded in a small corral. And that's the main thing with wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
If you crowd them, there's going to be problems.
So
right? And it don't matter whether it's a Martin or a Moose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What kind of things would you trap for besides, say, Martin?
What do I trap for? Martin? Well, we start out when we say beaver. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Beaver, mink, and otter. And the odd muskrat. There's not too many muskrats in the north there. There is some, but there's not that many. Then you get Martin, Fisher, Wolverine, wolves, of course. The odd lynx in there, not too many. We're getting a little out of the lynx country, because it's not so good rabbit country where I am. Not too many fox or coyotes, but lots of wolves. And, of course, there's grizzly bear wandering around in the middle of the winter up there, too. You can't trap them, but I was out here one time here a couple of years ago. I took the .22 rifle along. I wanted to get a grouse to eat. And trapper shouldn't be allowed to go grouse, nothing is. So So I didn't take the big rifle, I just took the 22 rifle in because I don't like carrying two rifles, it's awkward, right? Yeah, and I was checking my traps and fixing them along the way, only about 2 miles from home.
No big strip, man.
Oh, it's many, many miles long. I heard a noise behind me, and I looked, and there's a grizzly bear behind me, and there's about 30 feet, maybe, coming right at me. And that was the 2nd of December.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of snow on the ground. It wasn't all that cold, but there was lots of snow. So, I knew right away I better get out of there. I looked out my snowshoes and I told them, go, snowshoes, go, and I dropped my pack sack, left it there, and I took off for the cabin. And it's not very often you survive. If you get attacked by a grizzly bear in the wintertime, you won't survive.
Yeah.
He'll either kill you, eat you, or he'll die of exposure, you know. You'll never make it. But I hung on my axe in case if it come to hand-to-hand combat, I can fight the son of a gun. But I did get to the cabin, and I also played out the running all the way.
Was it chasing you?
Yeah, he chased me for a week. And then, of course, I didn't look back. After I got going, I didn't look back. He was coming after me, and that was it. And I was gone. So I know he come away. So then I was going to take the rifle and go back and shoot him. Because I was thinking, well, that bear hide, a beautiful hide. Oh, it was beautiful. Long fur, black and silver, you know, silver on it. Well, that'd be good. It'd be worth at least $1,000 for traveling and going to sell it. Well, I didn't go back. So the next day I went back. I had my big rifle then. And here the bear had made about 2 jumps over the top of my pack sack. And I guess he thought, now what's in the pack? You know, what is that?
Yeah.
He stopped, turned around, went back to it, ripped the pack sack apart, and ate 5 miles away from my pack sack. So that's the only thing that saved my hide.
Yeah.
Was what I had in that pack sack. Then he wandered back up the mountain and went farther up, higher. More elevation, and I didn't follow him. I thought, well, I'm alive, I'll leave you be. You know? So, and you know, I didn't need him.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, I left him be. But, I don't make pretty good scare. Now, after that, I sleep with my rifle. Every place I go, if I go to the bathroom, I take a rifle out there because you never know when the grizzly bear is going to be out there.
Yeah.
Of course, that day I didn't have my dog with me either because I had no reason to take the pack. Eh? I mean, otherwise, I'd even take my dog with me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he might have told me the bear was there, warned me, but still I'd had to run for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day I went, the day after that, I went farther north. And here's another set of grizzly bear tracks. That was on the 4th of December. And there was about 5 feet of snow there. So they still bear wandering around, not sleeping. Why? I don't know, but that's where the grizzly bear was. What
kind of money do you get for pelts and furs?
Well, last year was pretty good because we got over $200 from Martin, which is the biggest. You know, where you catch more marten than you do anything else.
Yeah.
And beaver was up to $125 on mine. Everything else was up pretty good except red fox and cross fox, or silver. They went up too much. But cross fox was okay. Otter was pretty good too. And the mink, I got more for mink last year, like $60 or so for mink, whereas normally a year before, I'm very lucky if I got $20.
Really?
So normally you'd get about $25 for a mink.
Yeah.
Actually, $60 back then.
Is that up very much compared to when you first started?
Oh yeah, when I first started trapping, it'd be like there was some years that I don't know whether it was during the war or. It'd be before 45, I guess there were some real good prices.
$100 for a beaver, $80. That's a lot of money.
That was way back then.
And then, you know, you could make $10,000 to $15,000 on a shot plant.
Mm-hmm.
But you had to work all winter. You know, you worked all winter. Well, last winter, I made $10,000, and I was only there for 2 months. You know, we trapped for a month and a half.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I could have trapped more, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not too bad. But, of course, it's like a lot of other things. It won't stay there, right? It's up and it's down.
Uh-huh.
Depends on demand. Depends partly on people like Paul Watson and those kind of guys, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, they get over in Europe and say, don't buy the fur. Just like the seal deal. Mm-hmm. That's what they're trying to do now. So, we, like through the Trappers Association and the fur industry of Canada, we spend a lot of money every year trying to combat this anti-trapping.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, we have people working full-time work all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The fur industry of Canada.
Yeah. How many people up the valley are trapping now on a regular basis?
Well, there's a few that are poaching on a regular basis, and you probably know some of them. Most of the native people don't trap on a regular basis here. A little bit along the road. A few poaching along the road, a few non-Indians poaching along the road. But there's nobody that I know of living in the valley that has gone out and spent the time on the trap line. Let's say Stacy Emerton and myself. Now, Stacy's gone. Last winter he didn't go away.
Yeah. Is he still up here?
Yeah, he's still here. Mm-hmm. But he was trucking and couldn't get anybody to drive his truck so he could get away. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes into the head of the mass, which is just east of where I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the Stickeen, he's on the mass. But there's not too many. I know some people at Hazleton that come to me last winter and wanted to know how to catch the marten, because they'd been there a long time and only had one. And, well, there's a piece of people that are supposed to know how to trap.
Yeah. How do you target different animals? Like, can you put a trap down and say that trap's going to catch a marten or fish or something?
Oh, not too much of a problem. Yeah. Now we use killing traps, eh?
Yeah.
Conybears, I like.
Don't know what they are.
Killing trap. And you can set your sets up so that either for a small animal or a bigger animal.
Right? Uh-huh.
You won't get a, say you won't, you can set a trap to catch a marten, but you won't catch a mink.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can set that trap to catch the mink, and you won't catch a marten.
Mm-hmm.
And also with a fisher, you may catch a marten in a fisher trap, but you not have to catch a fisher in a marten trap.
Mm-hmm.
And you can catch a marten in a wolverine trap, but not too often you catch a wolverine in a marten trap.
Yeah.
You know? Because here we're going by different size and sets, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Last winter I caught the wolverine in a marten trap, but it's very rare because it's a small trap, and it just got his head in it, and he was dead instantly. It just hit him just right.
Yeah.
If it hadn't got him just where he did, he'd just rip the trap apart because it's too big for him.
Yeah.
Now when you go on the canine, such as your fox and coyotes and wolves, then you've got to go to padded jaws because you can't very seldom get them to go into a conibear.
Yeah.
They don't go in a cubby.
I don't know what they are.
Well, they don't go in a cubby. You build a cubby to set them, right?
Yeah.
For marten or something, maybe. And they'll go in, but a wolf won't go in. He's too smart, so you got to use padded jaw traps, leg hole traps. But it don't hurt them.
Yeah.
It just hold them until you get there. Yeah. Or you can use snares. That works out.
Yeah.
Oh
my God.
I'll make you my last meal.
You remember the telegraph line running up through here?
Well, that one of the reasons that I bought this trap line when I got there.
Up in Stewart, or?
Is It's on the telegraph line.
No.
Years ago, my dad used to go into there, from Hazleton here, go up, over up the Skeena, and cross over the Nav, up to Belle Irving, down to Belle Irving, and we're down Mingansaw, because my truck line goes clear to Mingansaw from the headwaters of Belle Irving, so there's quite a few miles of telegraph line, you see, that on my truck.
Mm-hmm.
And also, my dad used to pack, a time or two, he packed Teagan in. It's Matt Teagan, the guy that owned the line that I have now. And Lee Adler also. Packing Lee. You can keep fooling around. But,
yes.
So it's got some historic value to me because of these old people that I know. And
spend much time on the run?
Oh, yeah. Every year for sure, I spend over 2 months on it.
Yeah.
And I went in, I went up the telegraph line from this end part way. I haven't been all the way through, but I told the wife one day, maybe we should snowshoe through. You know, come up from the telegraph line all the way just for something.
Come down.
Yeah. Just for something to do. You got lots of time. Why not?
Yeah.
You know? But you have to do it at the right time of year. Do it in like March or something.
Mm-hmm.
Where you got a little crust and no more big piles of snow, eh? Take your dogs and off back to grub. Well, but that's the area. Now we're getting into another kettle of fish, but that's the area which the wife and I would retire in is on that trap line, eh? And so this makes life a little uncertain. Because if it gets on, having this land claim, you see.
Yeah.
So they might say, well, we own that territory, eh? I say, I own it.
Yeah.
Because I bought it, you know.
Yeah.
And I use it. So then I say, it's mine.
As opposed to just having it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? So, but then someday they'll probably have to discuss that. But
how do you deal with a trap line as far as government and holdings and that kind of thing go?
You go through Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah.
First off, you would find a trap line that was open to be sold. In other words,
so there's a limited number of them.
Yeah, there's a very limited number. And no more available.
Uh-huh.
Like, shall we say, there's no new territory to be issued under a license. It either belongs to native people and may be registered through the band council, various families and chiefs and whatnot, territory, which covers a lot of territory. And then you have the areas that are owned by the non-Indians, eh, which are specific areas. It could be by watersheds, height of land, rivers, and so forth, and boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Eh?
Do you get an area
yeah.
when you buy a trap line?
So you have a specific area which is defined by these boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time it's by height of land and water courses. Eh?
Yeah.
Like the river on this side, the height of land there, etc. And so that's your area. You can't trap outside of that area unless you have a special permit on
right.
top of that, eh? You gotta stay within that. And there is, like I say, it's pretty all the ground is issued. So the only way you can get one to start with is find one that's for sale.
Right.
Somebody might be quitting trapping and they want to sell a line. Okay, then you can buy it. And then you would first go and ask some Fish and Wildlife if they will give you a license if you buy the line.
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody that gets a trapping license, a new license, if you've never had a license before, well, I say everybody, every non-Indian, this is why it's a damn discriminatory. Every non-Indian that gets a trap license for the first time has to take a course.
Mm-hmm. But they don't.
And yet they don't know how to trap any more than anybody else.
Right.
And this is discriminatory part of it.
It's the same way with hunting licenses.
Yeah. They don't need a license. They don't have to go to school on the court and take that hunter training course. They can just go out there. Say, you know why, you know, a friend of mine was on the trap line last winter with me. He spent a month out there. Then he went back to Germany, and then he come home, and when he come back here...
Is he from here?
No, he's from Germany, eh? And then he come back this summer, and he picked up his .44 Magnum, he flew to Vancouver, shot his girlfriend, and shot himself. Now he commit suicide. Now I was wondering if you know how come you never hear of the Indians committing suicide, eh? Okay? Never hear that? You ever try to shoot yourself with a bow and arrow? Give this guy a hard time here. Yeah.
What kind of people used to work the Toby Rough Line?
Oh, you talk to Eric Gendy, and
you don't really.
Some of those people. I know some of those, but it's not in my department. No, his uncle used to work on the telegraph line with his father, right? You bet. One of them was way up on my trap line over there, way up in there. Oh, yeah, that's the guy. Eric or somebody like that. Tell you all about those people. At least he can tell you quite a bit about it because what his dad and uncle have said.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Said you spent some time in the RAF.
RC.
RCF.
RAF is the Royal Air Force, which is English, eh? And RCAF is Royal Canadian Air Force. Yeah, I spent some time with that. Thought I was going to get out to see the world.
What years?
53, 4, 5, something like that. About 3 years there.
Did you get out and see the world?
No. Parked aircraft all across Canada. Back and forth, saw a lot of Canada. Back and forth, but... no. My career in there was colorful, but not on the side of them. I used to enjoy discipline, but at the same time, I don't like to punch a clock.
Yeah.
And so when things got too boring, I'd take off and do my own thing.
They didn't like that.
No, they didn't like that. No. Hey, I took a dim view. Yeah. Well, yeah. I trapped on the Musqua 1 year. And a fellow by the name of Lash Collison, Musqua out of Fort Nelson.
Uh-huh. His trap on?
Yeah, it was his trap line, and I trapped beaver there with him. And we had one horse, and it was just before the ice was going out. You know, most of the ice was gone, but there was still ice in the ground, see? And it's like we went a little bit too far, really. Waited long, a little too late, because it was thought of a little too much, and you had quite a job sometimes to get your horse around in the swamp, see? Mm-hmm. We got 111 beaver. Skinned, dried, and stretched in 18 days. Oh. And I think we had 3 otter to go with it. So that was really an experience that week.
Why so many?
Oh, there are lots on the line.
Yeah.
But you got to harvest a certain amount. If you don't harvest them, the bass will move. Right?
Yeah. Beavers like having babies?
Hey?
Beavers like having babies?
Oh yeah, they have bigger babies all the time, every year.
Yeah?
And if you don't keep harvesting them, why, no place to go with. Then they sometimes get diseased and they all die off.
Yeah.
And then it takes a long time for them to come back. So this is why you harvest so many.
Outside on the ground.
Every year you should. And then that way it keeps you good and healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. How often have you been lost?
Never.
Huh?
No, don't get lost in the bush.
I just put the back seat down.
Well, because you got to build it. If you're a bushman, you got to build in a homing device. I've been out a few times when somebody moved camp when I was gone. So I didn't find camp, had to stay out overnight or something. Find the next day, but you're not lost.
You just haven't got time. Idea where you're.
You just haven't got time to get to where you're going.
Yeah.
That's all. But if you ever think you're lost, lots of times you're in the bush and you don't know where you're going, but that's not lost.
Yeah. You know you're going uphill and you should be.
Well, no, the thing is, you know, okay, it's a bad day, cloudy day and everything, and you're not lost. You know where you are. You're here, but where in the hell is the camp? The camp is lost. Because you can't see direction, eh?
Uh-huh.
No sunshine.
So you're using other things as opposed to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then if you're just smart, you just take your cool and sometimes sit down, build a fire, make a pot of tea, and think things over.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't get lost. I don't. Sometimes, I've known some people that got lost here. One guy, two or three times here lately, he froze his feet and everything, but that's not normal bush people. He's too many years. That guy spent too many years in the bush, I guess, and something happened to his homing device. A woodcock, eh? Because he got lost several times. And, but he used to, years before that, he'd go out year after year and never get lost. But then finally, something happened.
Is there a time when you just get too old for the bush?
No, no. Some people do. Yeah, some people get too old for the bush.
But it depends on your ability. If you don't have the ability, you know, you can see you're too old for anything, you know. I don't think I'm too old to ride Bronx, but I probably don't have the ability anymore, so you could say, okay, you're too old. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's the same way as going out there trapping. You don't go out there unless you're good and healthy. You know you can make it through the winter without any disasters, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole thing with that. Lots of people go out in the bush and they're not prepared. Mentally or have the right equipment. You don't need a lot of stuff. You need something to build a fire with and, a respectable, say, rifle. And the mind to know where you're going, when you're coming, what you're going to do, eh? You can get lost right in your backyard if you're not mentally prepared for it. And so when you get out in the mountains like that, like one year on the trap line there I flew in, and I snowshoed out there. I'd never been through there before, but I knew I didn't want to go the other way because before I went the other way, it's too bad.
Yeah.
So I thought I'm going to go and make a swing that way and come around. And no problem. You know.
Mm-hmm.
There in the Yukon, I took off, me and my brother Glenn took off one time with a pack train, 20-something head of horses, and we were out for 21 days, going in one direction, more or less, and we ended up where we wanted to go, no compass, no nothing, you just take off, crude map of the area.
Flatland.
Eh?
Flatland?
Oh no, mountains, lakes. Swamps, rivers to swim, and everything. Then we ended up where we wanted to go. And then on the return trip, it was the same thing, eh? Only we went a different way. We didn't backtrack, eh? We come a different way. Oh, no red map, no compass, no nothing. We just know that's where we want to come out. And that's where we went.
Nothing's up there, thanks.
That's good.
You ever do any guiding and stuff like that?
Yeah, I guided here for 20 years or more. I guided up in the Liard River for Life Scholars in there for 3 years. Liard, the Toad, the racing, place like that. I guided for sheep and everything up there. And run my own guiding here for some number of years.
Mm-hmm. What kind of people would you get to look for guiding?
Mostly American clients, my friend.
Yeah.
And, a lot of my best clients were people just like you and me, just common people. Common ordinary people that had to save money to go for a trip like that.
Yeah.
The people that had the money didn't have to work for the money to go. Sometimes they weren't quite as good to handle as the one that had to work for them.
Yeah.
Somebody that took 3 years to save enough money to go on a trip. We had a lot of repeat hunters too, they like it 1 year, then 2 years later they're back, or 2 years they're back again, they're back again, they're back again. Those are the kind of people you like to have because they're good. They just like to be out there for the experience, whether they really shoot at it or not, they like to be there. It's a good holiday.
Yeah. How many people you usually take when you go guiding?
Well, myself, I only like to take a couple.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't it. I didn't commercialize on it. Like the guides, of course, have to do it if you want to make a living at it.
Yeah.
You have to commercialize on it. I didn't commercialize on it because I didn't want to get into that far.
Didn't have to.
Because here I'm trying to farm and everything else. Sometimes I was out there guiding me, and I wouldn't get some of my hay in.
Yeah, and then you're stuck on your hay.
Yeah, and then I'm short for winter feed, eh?
Yeah.
So I finally said the heck with it. Because I like working the land, eh?
Mm-hmm.
I like to farm. Even though you don't make any money at it, it's a good place to live. You take the land away, you got nothing, eh?
Uh-huh.
Without that land base, I mean, that's the soul of everybody, this land base. That feeds everybody. Even the people sitting in town eating plastics. If it wasn't for the land base, they wouldn't have that.
Can you make a living farming there nowadays?
Well, I've been doing it. It's not that. You don't live that high on the hog. Probably down around the new cause, but sometimes you get a break.
You ever find yourself in different areas of the bush that you found favorite?
Yeah, that's why I started up the valley here. That was a good favorite spot.
Mm-hmm.
I've that's why we lived there for over 20 years. Because I liked it, and also the places in the Yukon I've been, that you fall in love with, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Really, something about the area, just you really like it, and then you leave and you wonder why you didn't stay.
Yeah.
And you can't answer that. Just something you don't know.
Just sitting there feels good.
Yeah, you just didn't stay, and you don't know why. Why I come back here in the Kispiak, I'll never know, because I've been all over the damn country. You know, I mean, why should I? All we got is stumps and trees and brush, eh? There's something about it I like. Be much better off down in the Chilcotin there where I was years ago in the early 50s. I was down there working on ranches. And you could ride horses for miles and miles and miles.
grass and cows for miles. Well, they got their problems all right, but chopping windfalls out of your way wasn't one of them. No, that was great ranching country. And I worked down there with Frank and Dwayne Whitty for some time. They were
real good horse people, real good ranchers. And I learned a lot from them.
How often you come face to face with animals and just take a chunk out of you?
How often do you come face to face with an animal and take a chunk out of you?
Ready to take a chunk out of you.
I had one this spring here. Every few years you come to a situation like that. We had one right in the grizzly bear right in the yard here this spring. Can you destroy it? Maybe go away?
Kept coming back, or just kept hanging around?
Kept coming back, hanging around. He got in here too bloody close, that's too tame for me.
Yeah.
No way. I don't know what he wanted, but we didn't want him around, that's for sure. But there's another bad thing out in the bush, of course, is you get a moose in the spring, cow moose with the calves. Well, she'll charge you. Oh, right now.
Yeah.
You bet. She's just as dangerous as a grizzly bear.
What's the most dangerous animal in the bush?
Oh, it's probably a grizzly bear.
Yeah.
Grizzly or a black bear. They're in the same category. Neither one of them is any different because they'll both kill you.
How come?
I don't know. You could ask them that. If they can talk, they would tell you, too. It's a territorial thing with a grizzly bear. What it is with a black bear, I don't know. Because you see, a black bear, a grizzly bear, you know what he's going to do. You can tell what he's going to do almost as soon as you see him. You're used to those animals. You know what he's going to do. You know if he's going to charge you, or he's going to run away from you, or if he's going to sneak you. But a black bear, you don't know. And so many people think, oh, it's just a black bear, eh?
Mm-hmm.
No problem. You can scare him away. Oh, don't ever think that way. I tell you, I've had some close calls with black bear too.
Black bears are fun.
A lot of people have got slapped around with black bear.
Yeah.
And some of us got killed with black bear. And they'll kill your livestock, same as the grizzly bear too.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, but those are the two animals that they deserve your respect. Much more than any other animal in the bush. You don't have to worry about a wolf catching you once in a while. The situation will arise where you are in a bad position, and say if it got extremely bad, they probably would take you. But wolf's different than a bear. A bear will just come to you. With the wolf, he's got to sneak around. He's not quite as brave with man as a bear is. And them wolves have had me treated a few times. So I won't say that they won't kill man. No way. There's some pretty strong evidence that they have. The only thing is, if you're attacked by a wolf, you can't come out and say, the wolf killed me. You're not there to tell it.
Raising a family in an area like this.
Hmm?
It's like raising a family in an area like this.
What's it like?
isolated.
Well, this isn't isolated. No, back at the Bear Claw, it was years ago, eh? You know where that is?
Yeah.
Okay. This, of course, is, all the modern conveniences and everything, good transportation year-round, roads and everything else, telephone, communications, everything else. Up above, it was better than it is down here, because the closer to civilization you get, the more difficult it is to raise cattle, believe it or not. The farther back you are from people, the more healthy you are. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
And you eat more healthy because you don't eat like you do if you're closer to town.
Uh-huh.
Meat and vegetables, eh? And fish.
Right.
Good, solid food. And so your kids are healthy. Either they're born healthy or they're not, eh?
I mean, yeah.
Some people don't have the good fortune that I had. All mine were healthy. Some people don't. You know, they don't make out quite so good. Maybe they're not quite that healthy, but if they're, if they're born healthy, raising them back in the bush is a good place.
Mm-hmm.
Like building a farm or ranch back in the country, any place out of town.
What do you do with
the rural area?
You get in trouble, emergencies, somebody gets hurt.
Well, I need to look after your own emergencies. Like, I've had to sew them up, get cut open, kick the horses, this and that, the other thing. You doctored them yourself. And if it looks like it's, more serious, then you decide how to get out.
Right.
Like one time I come out with a snow machine. Brought a kid out to the hospital. I think that's about right now it's the only emergency that I can really think of.
Mm-hmm. What about yourself up in the bush?
Well, you're always safe. You work safe. You don't have accidents.
Yeah.
And they always carry Chinese peppermint.
What's that?
Well, it's little liquid stuff that comes in a little bottle you buy it from the Chinese people. They keep it. And it is particularly good for, say, poison that you would get in your system, say, through food or something like that. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
It's no good for blood poison. But then that's what hot water and Epsom salts is good for and stuff. You know, you boil the poison out of it. But if you get some poison in your stomach from either food poison or anything, you get what we call Chinese peppermint, that'll cure, keep you from dying. So you always take that and keep good habit, keep good clean, be sanitary, keep everything clean, like your toilet, you just be clean. Don't just go out there and live dirty.
Yeah. And you've got the time for it, anyhow.
Well, yeah, there's lots of water and soap, and it don't cost very much. So you stay clean, and you'll stay healthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the only other accident, that's going to keep your main health up, and you couldn't have something, you could cut yourself. You cut yourself, you can sew it up. Simple as that.
Yeah.
And it's not too hard a job. If you realize you have to do it, you'll do it, right? But some people with maybe a weaker stomach, they might pass out and never get the job done, but we've had to do things like that.
Uh-huh.
Usually if there's two people, it's no problem, but I stay over all winter on the shop line.
And never get hurt.
No problem. But I'm not saying I can't.
Mm-hmm.
But you just have to be prepared and do what has to be done, whether you like to do it or not. It'd be like a guy one time in Alaska years ago, when the Russians used to come over there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I still was still owned it, so it was all right for them to come anyhow, but these native people that lived there want some information from them. Where they were getting this fancy rocks and stuff they traded for, all gold, precious rock. And they wouldn't tell them where it was because they didn't deal with them very good, They didn't give them very much for what they got, and they abused them a little bit. So this one guy They took him up this valley, made camp. They took a poplar tree, put a wedge in it, and they split the tree. Then they put his hand in it, then they pulled the wedge out. And they said, okay, now you will tell us where it is, so we leave you there. Well, they took off back up the creek.
Yes.
And when they come back, this native fella had got a sharp rock off the ground and cut his hand off with it and left.
I need to get some.
Yeah. It was much quicker because it was squished and dead anyhow. Because that tree closed up on it, eh?
Yeah.
No good to it. So he just finished cutting it off. They never found him, and they never found the gold either.
10 years, did you say?
No, you got to be prepared for these things.
And then I had to get shots of adrenaline 8 times a day.
And it's sort of like when you're out there, it's sort of like that farmer who got married, and he picked a woman up. Well, the wife and him, he'd come home, and the team there, and they start out from town, heading for the farm. The horse stumbled. He told the horse, he said, that's once. And he drove on a little farther. The horse stumbled again. That's twice. Boy, just pulling into the yard, see the gate, look at that horse, he stumbled again. Well, the guy just took off the rifle and shot the horse. Oh, man, his new bride just started hollering at him and getting after him for shooting the horse. And when she was all finished, he turns around to her and said, that's once.
You've enjoyed it all? Never had any problems? You've enjoyed it all? Never had any problems?
Oh yeah, I always have problems.
Well, major problems.
You always have some of them too.
Yeah.
But you have to get over them. You never let anything beat you. Not if you're country. If you're used to the woods and living in the bush, eh? You never let anything beat you.
Yeah.
Even if you're out there, you bring your groceries up. Going down.
You can still have that place. All right.
You can't let it beat you. You have to live with, like when we're living out like I used to. You live with nature. You cannot turn it around to fit you. You have to bend yourself to fit it. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
There's no way that you can shape it to fit you. It just will not happen. And I don't care what it is. There's no way you can hold that water back.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming down that river. That's number one. There's no way you can turn the rain off or the sun off. We don't have control over it. That's a good thing we don't.
Right.
So then we just have to work with it. And if you learn to work with it, sometimes it's very frustrating because there's nothing to cooperate with, like dry water, stuff like that, or forest fires, and animals, things like that. Lots of times things just don't work out, but you just have to go along with it. People used to come in that upper Kispiak when I was up there, well, during the Vietnam War. All these draft dogs used to come up and they all wanted, you know, an acre of ground or something, you know. I don't know, not up to my end. And I'd run them out. And I'd have several of them. They'd come in, they want an acre of ground. They want to build a house, have a few chickens, have a few goats, live off the land.
Right.
And I said, well, number one, the first thing, if anybody's living off the land, it's going to be me first. I was here first. And I'm putting something into the country, eh? But you guys aren't. So you leave. Don't stop up here. So they'd come down the valley and settle down here.
Right.
some of them went to Telegraph Creek, made a settlement in there. They didn't stick around that upper end. No way. Because they were both, they can't survive. A lot of those people listen. And all it is draining the system.
They still draining the system, but they went somewhere in place.
No, you just got to go with it. The snow gets deep. Like we used to cross that river all the time for years. Eh? We should have been dead. We should have been drowned many times.
Ever fallen?
Well, we should have been swamped. You know, we went across there so high. The water was so high you couldn't even land a boat or a canoe or anything.
Yeah.
Because the water, the shore currents would throw you away. Try to get in and throw you away. And many times, daylight and dark. Also, too, we crossed on that ice when it was so paper thin that, well, it just kind of waved as you went, you know, like horse with shoes on it. The corks would go through the ice, water come up. Oh, yeah, right up because of the ice and the weight of that horse pushing down. And he'd pick his foot up and the water come up. I'm holding his cart, so you know that ice is not very thick.
They don't want any ladies
even. I don't either. No. If I had it to do over again, I'd go back and meet him. Only I'd stay there and I wouldn't sell and come down here. And
yeah. Who's up there now?
They don't really want
nobody.
That. They're still riding fine.
They just they're not come over once in a while. Summertime. Go back again.
Yeah.
Come over this holiday, that's all. Nobody farming. It's going wild. Trees growing up in it.
No.
But that's all right. Sorry. Oh, it's just I came to see it, huh?
Yeah, after you've worked it all
the time. Yeah.
You see your work just going back wild. We spent lots of time in
it. It's still God-grieving.
Yeah, but it doesn't burn. It doesn't burn. It's just like...
We started out there...
Glue on your saw.
I don't know that
we didn't have anything but a walking plow.
I don't know.
A team of horses. An old dish, mower, and hay rake. That's about all.
That's all you needed.
Yep. Sharp axe, good cross cut.
Yeah,
we didn't even have a power shot there.
Down really fast to grab the flag and
is that early 60s? Right,
yeah, that was 63 when I finally started up there. I kind of beat Olga to it just a little bit. Before you come up today, I went over to the cabin and filled one tape up.
You're kidding.
No. So I'll give it to you, too. And you can pick out some parts in it.
Okay.
It did, but we need more. We could spend another day, but we got the men and I want to go to action.
But the best the best years of my life will always be the year for this business of work.
Yeah.
Whether it be up at the Bear Claw Ranch or in the Yukon in the bush or up Alaska out in Tanana Valley or where it's what I spend in the bush the metropolitan center is not for this cowboy. No way.
Consider yourself a cowboy?
Well, yeah, I used to go and rope calves and everything else. When I got married, I decided in 63 that if I am going to raise a family, I don't want to go to the rodeo for a $50 prize and get all busted up. All
right.
But you can go all the way back for a long time.
So I quit.
Mm-hmm.
In 1957, me and the people there at Grayson River on 51 head of horses into Fairbanks, Alaska and put on a rodeo. Stayed there for a month.
There was a lot more water in there then than
there was in the
market. Really enjoyed that?
Well, no, that was
much from
heaven. Used to ride a lot of bronks. Here's your goal, really enjoyed it.
We ride back to Lake and meet recovering on Monarch and the bottom.
But it's it's a game that you have to be with and go with all the time. You can't just do it now and then. Every weekend in the summer, you shouldn't be riding in a rodeo. Whether it's roping calves or riding bulls or saddle broncs or whatever, because if you don't do it, you get out of shape. And you got to practice in between. And I was just in a position where I pretty well had it. Because if you're going to raise a family, and I don't like jumping around from here to there and all over the place. I can like to be home at night. But now I take the girls to the rodeo.
Well,
Monarch
did not.
It's kind of good for them. My folks couldn't afford to take me to rodeo and now they can, but I can afford to take mine to rodeo and go ahead and take them. Right? So that's the difference in the years, see?
Yeah.
It's not quite so hard to come by a little bit of money now. Transportation is a little better. I can remember the rodeos in Talpa, Labor Day rodeos. We'd leave here with horses. It took us 2 days to get horses over there.
Yeah.
We'd ride them from here, right? And it'd take 2 days.
Right
now, what it takes me to go to Talpa? 2.5 hours? The most? 2 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 hours. I can be over there.
Yeah, I know. It's gastric.
But not them days.
Come out of the third barrel and chopped on his back.
Lots of times we used to stay over at Astro's there, which is what they call the farm there now, the gardens.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Used to belong to Astro's, well, that was a good place to stay over. And stay over there, pass the horses overnight, and go on the next day.
That place has been there a while, then.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that thing has been there many years, that place. You bet. In fact, it's, the hayfields have grown up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That field alongside the road there where all those little trees are?
Yeah.
It used to be hay field.
Underestimating your horse.
Got hay in it.
Uh-huh.
It's from the front foot. Not anymore. Same way the Fred Fallon speeds down.
Yeah. What is that?
Well, it's a flat just below Farley's.
On the other side?
Yeah. On the road there, both sides of the road.
Okay.
Just down a little farther. There used to be a hay field there.
Some trees now.
I just knew
oh,
that.
It's thicker than hair on a dog's back.
Ross is always coming around me.
Yeah.
He changes.
We used to go with team and wagon years ago.
But something happened from
we'd go to town. Lots of times we'd go to town from here.
That's true.
And maybe get, if we didn't stay in town, oh, here comes one of them, that black one with a white face coming in there. You better put your boots on and go get him.
Oh, damn her.
It's the black one.
Thanks, Mindy.
Go down through the bottom and open the gate. Down through the bottom and open the gate and then come up.
Is she all by herself now?
Yep, she's in now. Well, there'll be more pretty soon.
You gonna miss out here during the evening?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Foggy. Lots of times when you go down the team wagon and team sleigh, why we'd go into town and then we'd come back to Lily Merrill's place. That's where Richard
Richard Claremont.
And go up there, stay overnight.
Nobody.
You're looking right at two shares. My sure. Call the dog.
Unfortunately, not.
But, and then come home the next day, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, sometimes I've seen it took 4 days to get down the back of the team.
I got some corn out there.
So, depends on the weather. Depends on the weather.
I don't know where
the cops are. We used to ride from here lots of times. We ride down to Kishbiox and go over and dance.
Beating on the gun over there.
Ride back in the morning and go over.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever we're doing, farming or working in the bush or whatever. Mom and Dad, they used to go to 4 Mile lots of times, ride down there, go to a dance all night, ride home in the morning.
The cake is good, but the icing is.
People actually had more time, I think.
Yeah, let me see.
Spent more time to sort of get together for those kinds of things. Them days.
Spent more time finding them. Looking forward to
it. The thing is, there's so many different people in here now. When you go to some place to a community gathering, hell, you don't know anybody.
Yeah.
You'll know a few people, but there's a whole bunch there you didn't know. And back when I was a kid, you knew everybody. We used to have a great rodeo at Kispiak's, too. Kispiak's Village.
Mm-hmm.
And you just put it on down there. Lots of fun. Down there in camp by the graveyard.
Yeah.
Down there in the wagon camp. I would put up a tent, sleep in the wagon, whatnot. Build a fire, put your food over the fire.
How long ago was that?
Oh, back in the 40s.
Not what we put in.
Last rodeo I remember them having there was about 1948.
We put that in there.
Things quietened down in the village, as opposed to 40 years ago?
As opposed to 4 years ago?
40 years ago.
Oh, 40 years ago? How do you mean quiet?
Less active? People?
Well, no. There's much more going on among the Indian villages now because they got millions of dollars to use.
To play with.
And before we didn't have them, they didn't get it, eh? But now they're giving it out to the reservations just by the billions, eh? And so therefore they're very busy building lots of houses. You know, years ago, Indian used to build his own house.
Mm-hmm.
And he was proud of it. My God, you go in, you eat off the floor. The house is clean. Oh, you better believe it. I know people in the village there that I tell you, it's a hell of a lot cleaner in their house than going in London, you tell them, white people tell them. They were proud of what they had.
That's like,
I haven't been to some of the new ones, but I know some of the, the new ones, you know, after they started getting this money and giving them things, they didn't look after it as good as they used to do.
Yeah.
No, it's different.
Government's house is not my house.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they didn't really work to build that house. Right before, they used to make nice log houses and things, you know. And so some boards too, you know, board houses.
He said, well, to have that make one provider.
No, it's entirely different. No, it's younger generation. It's entirely different. But years ago, they're going down there and camping and going to the rodeo and going to the dance.
And it stayed.
You know.
It stayed right up in three layers.
All of us kids, when I was just a kid, of course, you played with the other little Indian kids your own size and everything, you know, and what the hell, we all had fun, worked together.
Yeah.
We worked together, we played together, we fought together, we made love together, for Christ's sake.
It's more contact then with the village than there is now?
But then we thought, well, that would be...
For some of us, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, much so. Oh, yeah. Because there was absolutely no undercurrent.
Yeah.
There was always one or two non-Indians that you couldn't trust. There was one or two Indians you couldn't trust. Other than that, everybody knew it.
Right.
But not anymore. I don't think anybody trusts anybody. You know, that's what it seems like. Because you don't know where you stand. But it's just like when I was working for the Fish and Wildlife, and I was a conservation officer here. Because everybody's got to be treated as an individual.
Uh-huh.
I don't care whether you're a Chinaman or what you are. You're an individual. If you break the law, you're broken as an individual,
mm-hmm.
not as a group. And that's the way it has to be. That's the way it has to be, and that's the way it should be, but that is not the way it is.
Right.
But that's the way I used to try and look at it. And I got in lots of trouble for looking at it that way, too. But you can't discriminate against a whole whatever. You got a box of apples, one's rotten, why throw out the good ones? Hey?
Uh-huh.
And all these mountains right back in this place here, you know, when I was a kid, I used to live up there. A lot, I spent a lot of time up there. Because if I could go up there and snare groundhog and shoot goats and things like that, I didn't have to work.
Right.
But I'd sit up there, my binoculars, and I could look down on everybody's hayfield, and I could see when everybody else was working. And it really didn't bother me at all. Until one day I saw Mom and Dad out here at the baler, stuck out in the field, eh? Something was wrong. They'd been parked there too long.
Yeah.
So I jumped on my horse and I come down. It took me about 2.5 hours to come up to the top of the mountain.
That's
so I jangled right along, eh? Yeah, she had run her fingers underneath the belt on the baler and had them just about busted.
One thing I like, we went around and asked different people.
So when I took her to the hospital, the doctor looked at
them.
That was a disadvantage watching people. She was in trouble too.
They're going to log the valley off.
Hey?
They're going to log the valley off.
Yeah, they're going to log it off. You know, there's two or three ways to look at this. You see all that trees up there?
Yeah.
You look out there in the mountain, see all those trees? They're no good. They're rotten.
Yeah.
She was falling down.
They're rotten. Where I was working, back there, the faller goes out, he falls a bunch of trees. The skidder comes in and he'll skid about half of what the feller fell. He takes him into the landing, they'll only put on the trucks about half what he skids into the landing. So that's about 25% of that wood they're using. And they're just taking very little pulp too, eh? So, you know, most of that is rotten wood. The only thing is, we've got to do it in such a manner that we can keep logging this rotten wood until this new stuff is ready to harvest.
It's like 30 years.
Well, it takes more than 30 years for a tree. It takes a hell of a lot more than 30 years for a tree. You're looking at about 75 here. You and I won't be here. Probably.
Right.
Me?
She was sitting right beside me.
But that's got to go.
Everybody in my
there's no use saving any of it. But we have to do it in such a manner, like I say, so we can keep logging this rotten stuff until the new stuff is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the problem comes in, because some people say, oh, that's an awful mess. Yes, it is. I say it myself. But what can we do?
It's going to happen.
It has to happen. If we can figure out some other way so we can utilize more of this rotten wood, that'd be nice. And we got poplar, and we got birch, and we got cottonwood,
get more and everything more else.
We should use it all, eh? And then we'd only travel. We wouldn't get as many acres done every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're utilizing more wood, and we could hire more people.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't do it. And the reason that they can't handle any of this other wood, which is less valuable to the commercial market, like pulp, the people that are taking some pulp out around here are doing a whole lot. You don't get paid for pulp, you get it for free. You don't even get paid, I don't think, for skidding it. There's about enough money to load it and truck it, and that's all they want to pay for it.
Yeah.
And the forestry says, oh, you got to take it. So much of it, eh? Well, nobody can make any money taking it because we're making too much money now. And yet we need it.
Mm-hmm.
Like a faller, well, you know, maybe $250 is about, you know, or $250, $300 for a faller a day. Well, God, he needs it. His buddy power socks over $1,000. His buddy boots are $75.
Oh, yeah.
Just for an ordinary pair of rubber boots, eh? And all that equipment, hard to have, and all that stuff, and it wears out. In no time at all. And then, when I was working there last summer, I was paying $1,200 a month to ruin, so, you know, what's a guy going to do?
Right.
Now, if we could work for half the price, and everything else was down, we could take all of that wood.
Because for half the price, we can afford to do something with that wood and sell it to somebody.
Mm-hmm. Here's your apology.
We'll try to get those people to work for half the price.
Oh, we don't.
Yeah.
No, I won't, because they won't bring down the price of my fuel either on the farm, eh?
All right.
So, I'm going to have a good price. And then, if they bring down the wages and they're only half, my beef prices are only half enough now, and if they cut them in half again, where would I be?
All right.
So, even though everything else was down, still, we're in trouble. So, we're getting ahead of ourselves. That's why I want to go back to the bush fire.
Yeah.
Again. You know? Because we can live. Now my wife and I can live in a trap line.
I heard this has to happen yet.
This is cheap.
Well, you know, it's just different, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have quite all the amenities as you do here.
Yeah.
Get yourself a mobile radio. And that's all you need. Mm-hmm. Two way.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you just don't have everything that you have somewhere else.
Yeah, well, we got a lot of stuff here we don't need.
Yeah, it's like me living off $12,000 for 8 months in school.
Yeah.
And friends of mine living off $2,000 a month.
That's right.
Barely making it by.
Yeah.
Now you know.
Redden's here with you anyway. Little fat plum.
Well, I like getting up there in the trap line with the dogs. And I use the toboggan sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I make dog toboggans.
Use the dogs for pulling? Use the dogs for pulling?
And I pack them. But everybody can't do that, and it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Or they'd all be up there. Then it'd be too crowded for me.
You have to hold the
way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you won't go.
No,
you don't. You're soaked up in water.
No.
Well, it was really, really
back in guiding, you know, seen the time, you know, guiding, I remember one time.
Well, sure, because you have
sneaking up on this big old bull moose. Oh, he was a huge one. Beautiful. Beautiful raccoon. He was standing up in this mud wall.
Oh, yeah.
With about 4 feet of water, 5 feet, and then mud underneath, eh? Just mud, oozing mud to kind of sink down.
Yeah.
I told the tender, I said, now you wait till he comes to shore, because it doesn't matter where, what shore he comes to, we can still reach him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He got a little too nervous, and he shot him right out in the middle of this thing. I didn't have a rope long enough so that I could break his horn or something. His one horn was sticking out a little bit. So, here, late in October, it's cold, snow on the hills and everything, and my God, I had to swim out there, took my clothes up and swam out there and got the ropes on so we could pull it back in the saddle, I said. Oh boy, was that ever chilly.
How does that environment?
You couldn't wade, because if you wade, you sank in the mud, didn't you?
Uh-huh.
And of course it got too deep, and another time I had the same experience up to Kispiak's here.
Why?
We had this hunter, and he ended up getting a little too nervous when waiting for the moose to go across the shore and then go to the other side, and he shot it right out in the middle of the lake.
Well, how about,
so then we had to come back, get a canoe, take it way up in there, and I could have used a raft, but I figured he would go home and get the canoe. I like that better. Get a rope on and pull the moose up.
You can too. Create them all. It's when there's a steam roller, so you can't.
I can't. I went and I talked to somebody.
Oh, really?
Has it changed much since the 30s?
Oh, since I was a kid, it's changed a lot.
Yeah.
And
I won't say it's better. We don't have Johann's restaurant anymore. We don't have the old hotel down there on the river where it used to be.
The Anika.
It really makes you wonder, you know. Well, actually, you're not supposed to be your own kid to live. I was thinking about Sergeant's Hotel. I don't know what he called it. I remember Sergeant's Hotel. See, there used to be two hotels. One burned down or something. Mm-hmm. The one that was right down there by the river, eh? Right down there where the library is now. Mm-hmm. Down there, right beside Webster's house.
Mm-hmm. Webster used to work in it too, didn't he?
Yeah, he ran it there for years.
Is that the Hazelton you remember?
That's the Hazelton I remember. That was the best one.
Right.
We used to have a lot of clean fun around there then. And you'd ride it down, you'd go to town with the team, and there was always
Well, that's too bad. I knew that they.
A couple of the places there where we stayed in town and left the horses. Turner was one of them.
I was hoping
he would. The kid would come out and get the horses, look after the team there, put them on, you know, and got it, gave him 50 cents. Oh boy, that was a good helper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you'd have started this way, though, you could have missed him.
Yeah, well, 50 cents or a dollar or back in the 40s, it was something made for a kid. Not anymore, they were.
Yeah.
Give a kid a dollar, now he looks at you, I'm shitty, you know, and buy an ice cream with it. So,
No.
But no, that's the Hazelton I remember. The old Marshall brothers there on the corner.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know.
And,
I was kind of hoping he would come back. And then,
different ones, like Joe Allen and those old timers, you know. Which are old timers to me then.
He stayed at the.
They were. Those are people you looked up to, and so did everybody in town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at least
they
had a place to stay.
Of course, when I got old enough, the fire was chasing me out of all three in one night, but that's all right. The next day, you were back in again.
Well, they all left.
That was the only thing that was going for young people around here then, was go out and beer.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to ball games and everything, but that's the worst they could get into.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the worst they could get into. But again, beer that they shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
But look at it now.
All
kinds of drugs and everything.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
he didn't worry. He didn't have too many worries them days.
Yeah. Much of a problem with discipline?
So what are we on for me?
No problem. On or off the
well,
meter, there was no problem with discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Mama was a boss. Always.
Mm-hmm.
With most families. And not just mine, I mean, you know, it was all over. And no problem. No problem.
Yes and no, and that was it.
Yes, ma'am, no ma'am, or whatever. Well, no problem there. Mm-hmm. No adults.
So,
that's different today. They don't even call, they call their mother and dad with the first name, a lot of people now.
Yeah.
A lot of kids.
Yeah.
Which is very disrespectful as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the woman in her fight to get freed of the bounds, the chains of man, has gone a little too far, and now she doesn't get the respect that's due either. So, not just from your kids, she don't get it from the adults either. But that's a fact of this changing world.
Last year I used to have
and it's a part of the changing world that I don't appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my world, that world that I was brought up in and have lived in pretty well all my life, no honor, code of ethics, and everything, that meant everything. Lived by it. Everybody lived by it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just I was made the best man win.
They were
in the
rain.
That
well,
didn't happen sometimes,
could
but there was honor among them.